Dismantled, a podcast inciting curiosity, inspiring truth, and modeling deliberate space-taking on personal, social, and historical issues for people of the sun, the displaced diaspora, lifting love, discourse, solidarity, and liberation. Welcome, everybody, to our Latinx Dismantled Crew Week. We are excited to be back. We've been on a little bit of a hiatus, and we've just been recharging, starting new jobs, going on trips, and also trying to be active in these very challenging times. So I'm Cynthia.
I'm Maria Cristina.
I'm Lisi.
And I'm Gomez.
So good to have you both here today, and Maria. This week, we're going to talk about solidarity, but before we get into that, why don't we do our calling? We want to call in our ancestors, especially on these trying times. This week, I'm going to call in, I'll go ahead and start, if that's okay with you all.
Yep.
I'm going to call in Miss Anna Love, and she is an African-American black woman, older elder, who would come to the family groups. I just recently went back with my friend and colleague, Rebecca, to our schools to start our family engagement meetings. And we decided to, you know, announce that Miss Anna Love had passed away 3 weeks ago due to complications to an operation she was undergoing, and the community was extremely sad to find out, and we took a minute of silence. But we took a minute to remember that Miss Love came with love. She came with the love. She always gave us love. She was one of the few Black parents who could come to the meetings. There's very few Black families at this particular school, and Miss Love would always break down the 60s and the 70s and many of the direct actions that she participated in during the civil rights movement and how that influenced immigrant rights, and she built community. She was hoping to start a group with the families so that they could practice English with her and she could practice Spanish with them. And sadly, you know, she passed, and many of our members were extremely sad, moved to tears. And I just want to lift Miss Love up because we love you and we remember you, and you will always be a part of us.
I'll go next. My name is Gomez again, and I want to bring in some young people that lost hope at a very young age before a lot of the fruition for the immigrant legalization movement had its push in the late 2000s, and especially after the DREAM Act had failed at that time. And they are Leon Miranda, Anthony Soltero, and Miguel Mendoza. And I also want to bring an ancestor in, Emma Tenayuca, who was an organizer in Texas in the 19-teens and 20s and 30s. She organized pecan workers there, and she was arrested at the age of 16. I think it was the first time on strike. And I want to bring her in because I think it's a long history of solidarity, of youth organizing, of people really putting not just their lives on hold, but also pushing themselves to higher goals, community goals. And this is the theme for today, and I wanted to bring those folks in.
I am gonna call some words today. I am gonna call in strength. I'm gonna call in resistance. I'm gonna call in solidarity, even though we are gonna be saying it throughout our episode today. And those are the words that are in my mind today with everything that's been going on everywhere in the world. I want us to sit and think together about what is the true meaning of solidarity. How do we embody that? How do we resist the forces that are oppressing us, whether they are ones that are constant, regular, or others that are created through crises. So I am going to call in those words today.
Thank you. I'm going to call in some relatives who passed away a couple years ago. I've called Jacqueline before. That's my foster mom. And calling in my abuelita Lucy, Lucilia Gonzalez. Specifically these two in particular, because they kept me very connected to my Puerto Rican roots. And with everything going on with Puerto Rico, Mexico, the earthquakes and everything, the only strength I really know to hold on to is that was taught by both Jacqueline and Lucilia. So definitely calling them on today and for the rest of this year.
Thank you all. Appreciate everyone's call in, and we hope that these words and these folks fill our day together today while we tape. We're going to move into our check-in. If we have a moment of joy, a temperature check, a moment of being tried, let's think about it together. Does anyone want to start?
I can start. I was at a really amazing fundraiser last night, and it got pulled together in a week after the earthquakes. It started off with the Oaxaca, the first in the Chiapas earthquake that happened, and then subsequently we kept adding and adding and adding more, both people supporting and also organizations or efforts that would be supported by that organizing. And it was really beautiful to see nearly 300 people come out, and we raised over $11,000 in just a few hours. And so many people donated their time, money, art, food, liquor, music, and their art too, their poetry, their song. So that to me was a very powerful moment of joy amongst all the tragedy that's happening, all the loss that's happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you, Gomez.
I'm going to go next.
Yeah.
Kind of very similar to Gomez. I feel like this week, in being tried, not necessarily, but being called to action, it has been the biggest thing for this week with the Hurricane Maria who hit Puerto Rico, and the earthquake. I just feel like a lot of my friends who are connected to these motherlands, we've all been reaching out to each other. I've been kind of MIA, just really focusing on work and trying to get a lot done there. And it really tasked me with reaching out to my loved ones, staying connected to them and resurfacing and building that strong connection. So it's been beautiful hearing from family, friends, and also trying to help everyone else out during these times. So definitely shout out to all mi gente out there, holding it strong and focusing on the bigger picture and also remembering our ancestors. Appreciate you all.
Yes. Thank you.
Thanks. Should I go again?
Yeah.
This week has been difficult with everything that's been going on in Puerto Rico with the hurricane and all over, you know, Mexico, here, everywhere. You know, I feel like these times, this last couple of weeks have just been extremely challenging emotionally, and it's just like a mix of a lot of things, because you feel emotionally affected at the same time. Lizzie, like you're saying, there's like a trigger for action. There are moments of a lot of sadness, a lot of worry, a lot of fear, and there are other moments where I have had other moments of also seeing how the spirit of all of us shows up during these moments, whether it is making connections and making contact with people that we love, you know, or seeing how people take care of each other. And I, in the midst of all the very overwhelming and scary news and videos and photos and conversations that I've had, there's like all these things, that small things that pop out in the midst of that. And one thing that really warmed my heart, and maybe you have seen kind of going around in social media, is this video, this photo of these young kids. They're like maybe 5, 6, 7 year old in the middle of a road in Puerto Rico, like mountain road, and they have like their toy tools, you know, like the how do you call that, like, you know, like, you know, like their little, you know, trucks,
a shovel.
And a shovel, thank you, that's the word, like, but like, you know, like
children's.
Yeah, and they're like, you know, out there,
out,
you know,
Fisher Price.
Yes, you know, working. Yeah. And some adult, you know, posted that picture of that, and it's just such a symbol of youth, you know, kind of paving the way, and like, you know, like showing us the future and how it can look like, you know, and that rebuilding and reconstruction, like really working, kind of clearing the mess that they are finding, you know, in the world, and part of that we have in a way somehow left for them and created for them. And you know, I just, that photo really warmed my heart, even though there's an element of sadness to it, and yet at the same time an element of happiness, because it is a form of play in a way, right? It shows like it's play given, you know, I don't know, it was so, I'm thinking about that photo, and it's one of those things that brought some form of hope and joy in the midst of a lot of despair and challenging experiences in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, thank you all. I think I've been in the same boat. It's been really rough starting this job that I have. You know, being a professor, I knew it was hard work, but it's also been feeling challenging for many other reasons, you know, bureaucracy, school politics. We're really considering getting a union in, which I'm kind of excited about, and I'm a union baby. And, you know, teaching is challenging, but, you know, one of the things that I have a class, it's a first years in a master's of counseling program, and this class is full of many women of color, and I love that they are critical and they think, and one of the things that they were talking about was that during these times of crisis, there is like a unifying in this humanity and compassion that comes out, and people want to help and they come together. And one of the things that I wondered out loud about, and they thought about, was my class, was why is it that that's the time, right? When folks are saying, let's get together, let's help, when really in general, we need way more solidarity, in our communities, and, you know, showing solidarity to different parts of the world. And again, like thinking about how our foreign policy within this very westernized capitalist country impacts these other countries and further causes pain and hurt when disasters like these happen. You know, I was thinking of the post that you put, Marianne, and I copied it, and maybe we can read it later, but it sort of puts into context what Puerto Rico's struggle is. And if you think, you know, Mexico and the countries in the Caribbean and how much loss there's been and how hard it is to rebuild and how, yeah, in the heat of the moment, I think people are driven to do something. And then, you know, soon it dies down, people stop talking about it, but folks in these places are still going to need support. You know, and that photo did warm me as well. I posted it as well with the little ones because, you know, they are cleaning up a mess. And so, you know, just kind of thinking about how we can hold solidarity and hold space, but also giving it a critical eye as to why it's so hard to have solidarity, even within, you know, Latin American nationals or different countries in the Caribbean, mm-hmm. and how we've kind of been set up in many ways to not show each other solidarity. Mm-hmm. So with that, if everyone's cool, I think we should sort of start talking about this topic of solidarity. I think most of us sort of said it when we were thinking about moments of trials or moment of thinking and trying to get light in our worlds, is there are a lot of events recently that have hit our communities really hard, really, really hard. There's DACA, mm-hmm. who the president repealed and has said that this law will no longer be in effect. And the thousands and thousands of folks that are affected by that. There have been the earthquakes in Mexico. Devastating. Devastating. Someone posted a video and I was like, why did I just watch that on Instagram of, you know, this apartment building? It looked like it could have been anywhere. It looked like a neighborhood in Excelsior District in San Francisco, and how people were like running around saying, get out, get out. It's going to fall. And then you watch the building fall and people are screaming wow. and crying and yelling. And that's just been the reality. And then you see Puerto Rico, pictures of folks, you know, in water, not being able to get my homies here. I have a lot of Puerto Rican homies and Mexicanos, and like how that's affecting your psyches and your families. The Caribbean hurricanes, you know, in as far as St. Martin, when my besties Fran, you know, one of the little homes that her family lives in is completely destroyed. The island has been devastated. What can we do with all of this when we're so far removed? All of us still have Wi-Fi here.
Yes, we are recording.
We're recording.
We're eating. We're drinking.
Yeah, we're having mimosas. Self-care. Okay? Self-care. Okay. How do we get that out to our peoples? What do we do with all of this? And we're still functioning. Mm-hmm. We go into work. Mm-hmm. You know, Maria, I know, like, trying to get in touch with family, Lisi, mm-hmm. you know, Gomez. Like, how do we do this?
I know, that's a question. I think for me, the conversation about solidarity was very present during this time because I... There's a guy that I follow. He's Puerto Rican, Tito Roman. I follow him on social media, and after the hurricane, or maybe before, he wrote a post on, you know, appealing to Puerto Ricans in the island to stay in solidarity during this time. Mm-hmm. To really come together and work to stand again after this, you know, major crisis and how there are so many and the context in which he was talking about solidarities, because there are so many forces that sometimes make us go against each other, mm-hmm. and get again, you know, like, mm-hmm. And not actually support each other and unite in ways that help us, you know, survive the struggle together, yeah. Because of all the pressures from capitalism and individualism, mm-hmm. and all of that, plus, you know, this idea that sometimes the oppressed will fight each other.
Yeah.
That's true. So it's a big thing, right? Like, I feel like there is the sense, there is, you know, what is solidarity amongst us? And then what is the solidarity that then us from a place of privilege in the case of us being here and not, mm-hmm. where these catastrophes are happening, or in the case of DACA, for example, mm-hmm. that we're not undocumented. Mm-hmm. you know, what does solidarity looks like, and it looks different, you know, mm-hmm. from where you're standing and from where you're at. Mm-hmm. Because it's hard when you see people that, like you, with the same struggle, you know, not fighting, but like not being in solidarity with each other. Mm-hmm. And then there's like also us in privileged positions, and then mm-hmm. how we think about solidarity, and then like how we want to help, you know, quote unquote mm-hmm. help, right? Mm-hmm. And anyways, I'm going off on so many, like my mind is in this place, like when there's like a lot of like emotion brewing inside, mm-hmm. and like my stomach is like, you know, with a lot of feeling, and so sometimes the thoughts are not coming in very articulated ways.
But, yeah, it makes perfect sense what you're saying, and especially given, you know, that your family is living on the island and they haven't been able to talk to some of your family. But what is solidarity? I just, Lisa, you were talking about a sci-fi novel that you were reading, and I keep thinking, for many folks, and this is something that came to me because when the earthquake hit, the first earthquake hit Mexico, it hit Guatemala mm-hmm. very badly. And so my mom and I were immediately trying to get in contact with folks. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I used was Facebook and sort of like Facebooked and Instagrammed my cousins. And luckily everything was fine. But what my cousin said was, you know, it's horrible because it's the poor that suffer the most, mm-hmm. The desolation. And I can feel like, you know, folks are writing books about apocalypses, and mm-hmm. for folks, this is post-apocalyptic mm-hmm. feeling, I'm sure, mm-hmm. to like not being able to walk through your town and like everything has completely stopped. Mm-hmm. There's no internet, there's no phone system, mm-hmm. your means of communication are gone. And yeah, it's really left to folks to come together mm-hmm. and show each other compassion and stay in solidarity. But what does human nature do, right? Especially with trauma, like mm-hmm. what is your red alarm saying? Mm-hmm. Is your red alarm in your body saying, I just gotta save myself and whoever else is my loved one? Mm-hmm. Or is it saying, I gotta jump in this and start saving, helping other folks? Mm-hmm. It's such a complicated thing, solidarity, and how we're showing it. And the pressure of like folks living through that right now. I have never really lived through something like that. I lived mm-hmm. through the 89 earthquake in San Francisco, and that was really scary. And what I noticed there was me coming from a very low income, working class apartment building in the Mission. Nobody gave a fuck about us. And the fact that my building was going to get condemned, maybe I was crying at school. I didn't know what was going to happen. But I went to a school that was in a more privileged area of San Francisco, more residential, a high school. And kids just thought I was the weirdest person because none of them were affected. Many people in working class communities were affected the worst after mm-hmm. that earthquake. But yet on the media, all you saw was the marina burning, you know? Uh-huh. And so I'm wondering, like, what is it like right now for mm-hmm. folks on the ground?
Yeah.
Whose stories are being repped right now?
I think for me, I think one of the first initial instances is just like making sure one, family's okay. And then two, it's what I can't control what's happening there, but I see all the solidarity that's happening in Mexico. You see all these images because people don't trust the government and they're not getting help from the government. So they know they have mm-hmm. to, like, the only way that they can
move mountains. They don't trust the government.
And they don't trust the government, literally, is for them to each do it by hand.
Yeah.
And you see images coming out. And not just that, like people who do have businesses that have opened up their businesses, restaurants that are giving food for free.
Yes.
We have a friend, Norma, in DF, who's organizing these pop-up kitchens. She's buying shelter. And like finding out what organizations are actually helping on the ground, just identifying mm-hmm. those is hard enough. But then once you have that, like how you help them is you just kind of hear how they want the way to be mm-hmm. led. And mm-hmm. you just kind of stand back and just do what you can. And for me, I've always been a person that I can't control what's happening around me, but I can control how I react and what mm-hmm. I decide to put effort into. And for me, it's hearing what they need and what they want. And it's like sleeping bags, ponchos, mm-hmm. whatever, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. in the immediacy. But I like, how do those pillars of solidarity that come up in these urgent times then, how do you keep them?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because after 2 months, like, who's going to be the people still struggling? It's going to be the people who haven't been heard, who've been mm-hmm. silenced, and mm-hmm. and those families that have lost.
because of the faulty structures they lived in or whatever. But also thinking about, wow, like, people spent decades building those houses.
Yeah.
How faulty they were or not, that was their homes and their life saving that went into even them, whether it's renting or owning those places, right? So as a person that lives in privilege, how do we respond is really important. And not like a Band-Aid like type of deal, because I think about Haiti and the tragedy that happened in Haiti, and decades later, they're still suffering. They're still suffering from cholera. Or New Orleans. Yeah. All these different places. So
That's like, I think, in solidarity, right? Like, I think that's where we're being tasked the most. In what is a sustainable solidarity? Like, what does sustainable solidarity look like?
I like that.
Because after this, what happens, right? Like you said, right? Decades of repairing. And where's the solidarity when there isn't something like this happening, right? Where there isn't natural disasters and there isn't war. When there is peace and calm, where is that solidarity? I think that, like, Maria, kind of my mind is everywhere, and all I can, I think I have more thoughts than words. My mind is just going, replaying these images, and I just remember when the earthquake in Mexico happened. I didn't reach out to my friends as fast as when Puerto Rico happened and how they reached out to me. And I got so caught up in, like, just looking at social media and images and crying and being like, What do I do? That I should have contacted more of my friends quicker. And when Maria happened, the way my friends just contacted me right away, like, just hitting me up left and right, calling me, hey, are you okay? What's going on? And them posting for Maria, for Puerto Rico and things like that. Like, it just really hit me harder. And it's tasking me to just want to be better and improve and stand with, regardless of color, race, socioeconomic status, to just stand with brothers and sisters as a human force. Like, because having to rebuild, I can't even imagine what it's like having to rebuild. I've never even lived through any natural disasters. Like, the most I lived through was watching the Twin Towers fall. But I wasn't impacted by that personally, you know? And I saw, I just remember there's this video of this pueblo in Mexico, and you just see thousands of people, just, it's just crowded, so many people, and you literally see people lined up strategically passing barrel, like, trash barrels, and they're all filling it, and the whole group is just working hard, and they have these mujeres who are making food out there and just cooking for people. And I want to live like that. I want to live like that here in Oakland. I want to live like that anywhere I go. I want us to all live like that. You know, it doesn't have to be a natural disaster, but if you know your neighbor's hungry, if you know you have more privilege than another group, you know, how can you fill in those gaps personally? And that also makes me think about race. And especially in the Latino, Latinx community around anti-blackness. And I was watching this video yesterday on YouTube, de Puerto Rico, and this guy was talking, and I was watching about Bomba y Plena, and there were folks singing in the military. They were playing Bomba y Plena, who were waiting to get to Puerto Rico to help. And one of the guys said, he said, this is music from our Taino ancestors, our African ancestors, all the way to now. He said, from the lightest to the most blonde, blue-eyed, to the most darkest. We are all one. We are all the same. And with our Mexican brothers and sisters and even our folks in Guatemala, like, he just shout out everybody. And it was just beautiful, like, just to see them singing and including everyone and being like, this is important because as a people, it is important for us to exist. And if this continues to happen, it's the fear that we will no longer be existing. And the folks who tend to be impacted the most are those who are lower income, right? Those on the margin. And a lot of times in Puerto Rico, historically, those who are more negro. And so for me, I'm not even on the island. And I think culturally for me, my fear is what happens if we were to lose our culture, if that were to be erased, And for me, that's the biggest fear is how do we exist as a people? Because if we go back in time, you know, the indigenous folks traveled. My people were the people of the canoe. And I know damn well they didn't stay in Puerto Rico. Yeah. I know they hit Latin America, you know, like I know they were down there and they came back. And even with the split between Dominican Republic and Puerto Ricans, you know, it's like this unity happening. And how do we keep that? How do we maintain that? I think it's the biggest thing I'm asking myself. How do I maintain that here in the United States?
Yeah.
Yeah, there is so much that's, you know, the thing about this disasters is that we know that it's going to be, you know, people of color, you know, poor people that are all that are always going to be carrying in their bags the effects of all of these. And you know, there's this, what you were saying, Lizzie, also made me think about, you know, sometimes we feel more, when we see these images of natural disasters and all that, like, we have, like, this human, like, empathy thing that makes us feel very, a lot of compassion and wanna support and wanna help. 'Cause there's something about feeling out of control from what happens in nature. But I think that natural disasters, you know, they are political, you know, like, you know, like, yes, you can't control where the hurricane goes through or where the earthquake hits and, you know, none of that. But the fact that, you know, some places in the world actually can have some form of information about whether there's a hurricane coming their way or not, that's political, you know, that's like because of resources, that's because of you know, resources that maybe other places in the world don't, you know, like I was speaking the other day in one of my groups and there were some moms sharing that when Hurricane Mitch hit Honduras, they didn't know there was a hurricane coming. Like, they had no idea.
So they didn't prepare.
Nothing, you know, like, they had no idea, you know. So how is a hurricane not political, you know, if that's, you know, if there are people actually that cannot have a chance to prepare, that do not have the resources to prepare, that their homes were built in areas that, knowing that that's a hurricane prone area, that were built in areas that were at risk or Houston, in in materials that are not going to sustain, you know, how are those decisions are made by people in power in a way, right? Or people that do not have access to power, that don't have any other choice than to build their homes there. And then afterwards, the aftermath is so political. You know, you see how corporations take advantage of crises like this, you know, to you know, make more money, to displace poor people and people of color. You know, like, natural disasters are natural, but they're so unnatural. You know, their effects, like, the way they hit you and the way you have to deal with it, it's so political, it's not natural.
That makes me think of one of the first articles I read about Hurricane Maria. They were interviewing a lot of different people, and the person interviewing folks, he asked a tourist who was staying in a building in Puerto Rico by the beach, who that was built around like 2011. He asked them, you know, do you feel safe, you know, how are you feeling? And the guy literally was like, well, the building, you know, was built later on. It's fairly new, so I feel safe. And this is actually adventurous for me.
Oh, my gosh. Talk about privilege.
So, you know, my rage was boiling up. So, you know, it's like also calling to all those folks who are tourists, you know, like you say political, right? So those are like the red flags. Like, yeah, for this guy staying in a hotel by the beach that was built in 2011, ooh, adventurous, Tom, because you get to travel back to America, right? But for the families there, like my titi, whose house was blown away, it's destroyed. You know, what is it going to take for her to have to rebuild that? And it's not like in America, you can just go get another apartment for rent. This is land. This is families, like generations of folks who have built cities or streets, you know, that belong to a line of family. And it also thanks to my coworker who's going to Mexico City in like a week. And I'm like, are you really going to go? And she's still thinking of going as a tourist, you know, on vacation. And I'm like, honey child, you better rethink that.
I love the honey child. I love the people that I knew that went,
but what they did is they turned their trip into like, I'm taking shit to take exactly. to give to people. So she loaded up and got donations.
She's money. Not thinking that. Oh. She's like, my job sucks and I need to get the hell out of here. And I'm like, mija, no, like, go somewhere else, you know?
Everything that you're saying, I keep thinking, my parents and I always go to brunch at Cosecha, and there is one of the friends of ours who works there. He's a busboy, and he's from Guatemala. And that weekend, right after the earthquake, my dad loves talking to him. He's very young. I don't even know if he's out of his teenage years. He might be like 18 or 19, this young man. And my parents are really concerned about his family in Guatemala. When we asked him, you know, he said that his grandfather's house was completely, it fell apart. And then he said, but my family, the rest of my family is okay. And we're going to build him a house with different materials. Like now it will be like something made out of metal and tin, like you see often in many Caribbean and Latin American countries and towns. They're like makeshift homes, really. But that's someone, to us, it looks makeshift. Mm-hmm. But that's someone's home that they built with their hands. Yeah. And when you think about it, it's like it can easily fall apart. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of times the floor is dirt. Mm-hmm. You know, that doesn't mean it's not the cleanest place on earth. You know, it's like someone's home. And it just made, it crushed me to think, like, you know, for this older man in Guate, how his life has changed. And so, you know, my mom and my dad were just like so overwhelmed with like hurt and pain because they survived a horrible earthquake in Guatemala many years ago and how everything just crumbled around them. And like how my mom and my grandmother would say, like, the poorest folks are the ones that are the most, you know, devastated by this. And my mom remembers sleeping on the rubble and looking up at the sky and seeing stars, you know, while she slept outdoors after this earthquake. There are stories. Mm-hmm. So there's like lore and stories, folklore that come from these events that, you know, are completely political. I want to see how certain places and these countries are going to be rebuilt and who they're going to be rebuilt for. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I can guarantee you it's not going to be for, you know, the Afrodescendientes, the indígena, the working class poor. It's not going to be like that. You know, mm-hmm. as soon as you can get some commercial area in, some commercial folks going in and rebuilding. And that's when I start to worry, because it's not like they're saying, let's keep everybody here. Mm-hmm. And we see it in its devastating forms within the U.S., you know, in the form of gentrification. Yeah. We see that.
Katrina.
All of that. And
Sandy.
Yeah. How can we turn this into, like, you know, more of a tourist area so we can, and part of it is you do need money, right? And you're trying to generate funds and jobs. And part of it is that, but how can it be to not the detriment of poor folks who actually make that country or that town, that city, what it is.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Who make it that, who give it that beauty, you know? And so, like, it is, like, there's this thing where you brought up some stuff on, like, Lisi, how hard it is to be in solidarity when you're thinking about class systems and race. And who is being talked about, whose stories are being told, and what is the difference between solidarity and a helper missionary, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm sure all those missionaries back in the day coming from Spain and Portugal and France thought, oh, we're going to go help these savages and, you know, make this country, you know, this land ours and better, you know, and that's a missionary, you know, Christianity and how much havoc that caused.
Colonial, imperialistic.
Yes. Yeah.
But even in gentrification, oh, I'm going to make the neighborhood better.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Improve it. Yeah. Improve it, but not for folks who are there.
Clean it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, people say gentrification is the modern day
colonialism.
Colonialism. It is. It is. It is. So what, I mean, what is the discourse that we need to build?
And even in, like, our conversation about solidarity, like, when all this started happening, one of my foster sisters, which was my foster aunt, whose house got blown away, it's just completely destroyed. It's, like, first house I ever went to when I was in Puerto Rico. There's, like, history there. It took them years to build and years to even maintain. And I remember I was talking to my foster sister, and people were telling her, well, be grateful your tia's alive. And I was like, holy moly, like, do they not understand how deeply rooted having property is? Like, the Puerto Rican people had what? Grito de Lares? One day where you were free before another colonizer came and took your shit? Like, it's, you just can't. And standing in solidarity is more than giving resources. It's also, be very mindful on what you say to your friends, what you say to people in the community who are suffering. My tia Pitusa is in Arecibo, and we have not heard from her. Last, I was talking to my tia in Connecticut for an update, and we still have not heard anything. Arecibo got hit really, really bad. And my tia was telling me that, shout out to my titi Chelly, she said, Tia Pitusa did not want to leave her house. So when they got the warning, she refused. She's older. She's lived there for years. Kids there. My abuelita Lucy died there. De paz descanse. And Tia Pitusa, you know, I hope you're alive. I hope you're out there. And it's like, damn, she didn't want to leave her house. And I can't be like, oh, that's dumb. No, that's not dumb. I don't know how that feels at all. And like, how deeply rooted that is, just like, you know, hurricane's coming. People are telling you to evacuate. And your pride, your love, you know, like the history, all that that comes with that home. You stay there. And you want to just remain there. And we haven't heard from her. And that's literally the last thing we know, is that she just didn't want to leave her home.
Oh man, that's deep.
Yeah,
it is. It is.
It's kind of also, it contextualizes people's, you know, ways of dealing with these situations, right? It's not like a one and all solution to protecting people in these kinds of situations, right? Because, like, depending where you come from, there'll be reasons why people may not want to leave their homes or to move, or, you know, so, it, you know, it's like that connection between the emotional, the experience, like, the, you know, the way you think you're protecting yourself, and then, like, also, like, the political, right, and the context, the history, you know, the relationship that we have with our land, with everything.
Exactly, yeah. Like, my abuelita Lucy, she, my great-great, grandparents, they had seven daughters, and no, nine daughters, and all were farm workers, and all went off to being housemaids and worked really hard. And that's, you know, like, it's like, no wonder she wanted to stay there. Historically, that's like something that was so fought for. So I can't even imagine. That also makes me think of a video I saw también. The hurricane was happening, and they would, they show this one video, I don't know if y'all see it. And there's a Puerto Rican flag outside the window, just waving. Like, someone who was in that house were like, ran, got their Rican flag, stuck it out the window. And they were like, piss out, regardless. And I just, I watched so many videos last night, and I was just bawling my eyes because, like, I didn't grow up on the island. I'm not as connected to the island as, you know, my spirit longs for. It's like, I feel it inside me, and my connection is strong, but I couldn't even imagine that deeper connection. And I was like, And I was joking, and I was like, man, Puerto Ricans, we just rep all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, we on the brink of dying, and somebody got to stick out of the flag, you know? And I'm like, that's solidarity, yo. That's solidarity, because that flag doesn't just mean, like, hey, I'm Rican.
No, that's culture. That's history.
Exactly.
That's culture and history. I think about Wichitan, right, the town that was hit hard in Oaxaca, and that matriarchal culture, the history that's there. Mm-hmm. And how important it is to, there's some people that might not be able to get out. I think about one third of Florida was asked to evacuate within 48 hours. Mm-hmm. Of those who knew they had to do it, who had $1,000 to purchase a ticket to get out? Who had, like,
exactly,
you know, however much gallons of gas was costing? Mm-hmm. And then on the freeways, who had a car?
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I think about, like, okay, so even in those temporary displacements, like, people of color, our folks, they're not temporary, they're permanently displaced,
mm-hmm,
oftentimes. And a lot of that is about erasing culture, erasing, mm-hmm, history.
Yep.
So you think about multinational corporations and how they come in after, mm-hmm, these disasters, and they implement stuff that wouldn't have happened in normal circumstances. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about all the GMO food that's being given to all these countries now, and they never wanted to take it, but now because of the urgency, there is no other choice, right? Mm-hmm. Or I think about, like, these pueblos that have these rich histories, mm-hmm, of cultures that are historically so important, yeah, to queer folks and other folks, mm-hmm, around the world, and how they will be able to rebuild.
Yeah, there were people on Facebook. A young woman came from Puerto Rico and is here, and on Facebook she posted she's looking for seeds,
mm-hmm,
to bring back to farmers, mm-hmm, so that they can grow.
Wow.
And for me, my mind went to, you know, like, the U.S. relationship with Puerto Rico, mm-hmm, and the imports and export and that control,
yeah,
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, seeds, that's mm-hmm, huge. Like, I didn't even think about, oh my God, send seeds so that, mm-hmm, they can start to grow,
mm-hmm,
back on their land. Mm-hmm. And so it's more than just sending, like, spam. A lot of spam has been, and corned beef has been being sent.
Yeah. It does, yeah.
I'm like, that's what I grew up on, you know, as a poor,
yeah,
folk.
Yeah.
But like you said, right?
It's like you're making me think about my cousin. She was able to contact some of her brother. Okay. My cousin, her brother. Okay, the wife of her brother. Okay, her family.
wait.
So she's family, but they're like, you know, like an extended family.
Okay, yeah.
She was able to make some contact with them, and they live in the same town as my mom lives, up in the mountains in Naranjito. And there was a night, like last night or two nights ago, she was able to connect with them, and they were singing plena, eating Chef Boyardee. I'm like, you know,
insane.
Like, that's, you know,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
this just speaks so much,
mm-hmm,
to all the contradictions,
mm-hmm,
and the reality, right,
mm-hmm,
of, like, what's available,
mm-hmm,
and what it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And also the culture and the pieces that are kind of inside all of us,
yeah,
and that help us survive, you,
exactly,
know, like, it's not the Chef Boyardee, right?
Yeah.
It's like the getting together, eating together, and,
yeah,
like, cleaning together,
yeah,
the town and singing,
yeah,
together,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And then all these other things that are, like, kind of invading us, right? Like,
yeah,
Chef Boyardee is invading,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
the,
yeah,
same way as spam.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. No, I keep thinking everything you all are saying makes me think of this post that you put. Well, first, it makes me think that for solidarity to be solidarity, we have to ask the people most affected,
mm-hmm,
what is it that they,
yeah,
need,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, your friend Lisi was probably like, let me find out what, you know, the folks get toil the land, you know, they work,
mm-hmm,
on the land would need. They would need seeds, you know. That's,
mm-hmm,
not necessarily something we totally think about.
Yeah,
or,
I didn't think about that.
Yeah, or like another friend of mine is like, you know, necesitamos guantes, you know,
mm-hmm,
things that help protect your skin from,
mm-hmm,
getting contaminated or,
right,
touching,
right,
things,
yeah,
and,
yeah,
like, things that you don't think about that folks are saying, okay, this is what we need. So I think that that's a really great first step, is like figuring out how you can help by asking those most affected first.
Mm-hmm.
And then also makes me think of your post, Marianne. I don't know, is it okay for me to read,
yeah,
your post? I reposted it on Facebook. I wrote from Maria Cristina Borges. It says, Mara Pastor's post translated by Ronald Mendoza de Jesus, which I entirely subscribe, for all my English-speaking friends and colleagues in the U.S. Every single one of you should be aware of the political relationship between the archipelago of PR, Puerto Rico, and the United States. Many friends abroad ask me what they can do to help us. This is what matters the most, to advocate for, one, a moratory or an amnesty on Puerto Rico's national debt.
Yes.
Yeah.
Two, the repeal of the Jones Act.
Mm-hmm.
Three, the repeal of the Promesa Law and the Fiscal Control Board.
Mm.
Now more than ever, we need the removal of these three colonial fetters. The island is completely destroyed. Only if we are free from these three yokes will we be able to begin reconstruction in a just manner.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
yeah.
For real.
I know. Mara Pastor is a writer from Puerto Rico that I follow, mm-hmm. and person who translated, I don't know who it is.
Yeah.
Thank you for the translation.
Yes. Yes. But that is how we say the personal is the political, mm-hmm. and the disasters are political. There's
yes.
these natural disasters are political, and we need to stay woke.
Mm-hmm.
But that also speaks to me about the idea of solidarity and allyship, is that, you know, in these moments of crisis, we get, you know, like, let's help, let's bring
mm-hmm.
what people need, and whether
mm-hmm.
it's, you know, right, like whatever suministros people need,
yeah.
like
mm-hmm.
whether it is water or food
mm-hmm.
or different kinds of things. But it is really through the constant struggle to fight, eliminate, resist and eliminate and dismantle these policies that
yes.
are the ones that make these disasters
mm-hmm.
the way they are,
yes.
That keep people oppressed,
mm-hmm.
that keep, you know... you know, that's what, for me, what looks like true solidarity. Like,
right.
let's get together and fight those policies every day, right?
Agree.
Like, all the time, before the hurricane, after
yeah.
the hurricane, or before the earthquake, after the earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
I was also, I reposted something that someone posted, and I don't know, I don't have the link right now, but someone posted on... I don't know if it was on Instagram or Twitter, but something that said, whatever, like 3.5 million Americans are just, you know, in Puerto Rico have lost everything, or are, you know, like the whole island is devastated and no one in the U.S. media is covering it or cares for it, right? And then someone responded, why do we have... to care just when people are Americans.
Exactly.
Yep.
You know, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, why is it that we have to work, like, you know, like, it is,
yes.
you know, like, yes, it's true, we're second-class citizens, but why do we have to be Americans in order for, you know, the government and, like, people
mm-hmm.
care and
mm-hmm.
be in solidarity and be allies
mm-hmm.
and care for what's happening, and it
mm-hmm.
makes me think about DACA and the fight for DACA,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Or the rest of the world.
And the white supremacy that's behind
yes.
that, right?
Yeah.
And that Trump didn't send any aid to Mexico or Central
Nothing.
America for earthquakes.
Or
and they're probably
the
only
islands.
Doing it Puerto Rico because of the territorial relationship
mm-hmm.
and the grip
and
they
probably
got.
New York.
Yeah.
New York was shouting out Puerto Rico
oh,
left
yeah,
and
yeah,
right.
Yeah,
they're
yeah.
probably doing more than the president himself.
But also, like, all
right?
the Caribbean was affected by these hurricanes, not just Puerto Rico.
Exactly.
And also, because of the Jones Act,
mm-hmm.
because of all these laws,
mm-hmm.
we can only get support from the U.S. Like, we might be better able to sustain ourselves or
yes.
get help from maybe other places
exactly.
quicker
yeah.
or better.
Or, like,
yeah.
all
but
the Caribbeans coming together.
You know?
Know?
So, like, you know, it's like there's this thing, like, you have to be American to kind of be cared for or not, or not forgotten or entitled,
mm-hmm.
you know, privileged. And...
Yeah.
You know, why? No, actually, everyone in the world
mm-hmm.
deserves, you know, a fair, like, just
mm-hmm.
life.
Yeah.
And, like, let's not forget, you know, Americans, half of our stuff comes from other countries anyways. What are we really making, right?
I know.
What are we really doing here in America to sustain humanity?
Yeah. And I also,
yeah.
like, this is something that my dad was talking about last weekend. In terms of Las Americas, right? And
yeah.
the Americas
yeah.
is, you know, he's like, that's Canada, that's
yeah.
the United States, that's Central South America,
mm-hmm.
Mexico, you know, and this sort of narrow rhetoric that
mm-hmm.
exists by like you know, white supremacy and what an American is, you know? And like, and I saw that post you're talking about, Maria, and the, how the person reacted, like, why do people have to be American to be like shown empathy and compassion for you to care? What does it matter? It's human beings that are suffering. And, you know, it's the truth. It's, it's, and I keep saying this, if, you know, we need to start in general caring about global policy, foreign policy. Many people who vote in this country think only about within the confines of our country itself. But reminding folks that foreign policy hurts other countries.
And hurts us too.
And hurts us too.
Right.
And so, like, you know, really politically, there's no candidate in the last election that I wanted to vote for. You know, there wasn't. And so what does that mean in terms of us getting liberated? We talk about solidarity, want to create discourse, dismantling these things, but how to get liberated from these, this like farce of a two-party system and not caring about foreign policy. You know, I've talked to so many white liberals. They'll say something great about some Democrat. And I'll say, yeah, and during their term, blah, blah, blah happened in Central America.
Yeah.
Oh, well, their foreign policy was never that great. Yes, oh, punk. Okay. So, like, why are you sitting here touting these greedy politicians? Like, you know, why are we always the sacrificial lamb abroad? Why?
I think that's a, that's the thing. Like, we have to never forget the relationship that the United States has with Latin America, not just with Puerto Rico. Like, it has been one of exploitation. It has been one of pillage. It has been capitalist, colonial. It has, like, we have that relationship with the United States, you know? And, yeah, what you were saying just, you know, makes makes me hold that truth, you know?
It angers me so much. And then I think, like, well, what can I do? What can I do? You know, and many of us might be feeling a high level of impotence right now. You know, it, feeling like we want to make a difference can be totally paralyzing.
It can be.
You know, so we just have to figure out ways of informing ourselves. Honestly, a lot of my news comes from Facebook. Good sources on Facebook, I might add. Like,
you're like secondary sources.
Yeah, I'm not watching no Fox News on Channel 2.
No,
and,
no.
You know what I mean?
Some of the people in, like, in the community or who are so connected to their people, you know, in the motherland have the better update. That's where I've been getting my update on Puerto Rico, which has been asking folks, especially my people back in the East Coast who've been really standing up and getting donations. Shout out to Connecticut. They had their little, like, quick Puerto Rican parade. Everybody came out with their cars and flags, and they were, like, submitting donations and everything, and they responded quick. That's awesome. And that was my update.
Yeah. And it's uplifting in some ways.
I think what we can do, a lot of you have mentioned, I think listening, you know, listening what people need, whether it is in Latin America or whether it is here and you're trying to be in solidarity, like, it is really about listening. What is it that that other that you're trying to support, what do they tell you they need from you, in a way, you know, not that you're always expecting them to tell you, but really listen, you know, like, check your privilege and really listen. That's, I think, one thing that we can do.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I don't know what other people think. I think you asked that question, right? What can we do from here?
Yeah.
Or
any other thoughts as we near the end, right? We're like at an hour, are we?
Yeah, I think, listen, I think one thing that was huge for me this past weekend was I saw that there were several events, fundraising, and that's beautiful, and I like that. But I think ultimately I want to see all that come together in one. Like, what does it mean for the community to call a meeting with all of our folks, regardless of race, you know, to talk about policies and protocols that we want to implement within our own homes, mm-hmm. in our organizations around DACA, mm-hmm. and how to support those students, mm-hmm. as well as how to fundraise for Mexico and Puerto Rico, mm-hmm. the DR, include them, mm-hmm. you know, include St. Thomas, like you said, yeah. you know, like this is bigger than Puerto Rico was not the only place that was hit. You know, Mexico City was not the only place affected. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's a lot of these fundraisers pop-ups, right. like almost every day. Yeah. And unfortunately, I can't make that every day. And so I'm forced to pick one where I wish I could split myself into like 10, 12 and yeah. be everywhere. And, you know, I think for me, it's tasking people and challenging them. Like, what does that look like to come together as one? You know, like I know right here in the Bay, we got two Bomba groups. What does that look like to have yeah. one event yeah. where we all bring that together?
Mm-hmm. Unity.
Unity, right? Mm-hmm. And real solidarity. It's not about competition at this mm-hmm. point. It's not about which org can raise the most money. It's about us all coming together and sending the most.
Mm-hmm. And really finding those sources, too, because some folks have been sending stuff and then it's not getting to the people most affected. Mm-hmm. So I think also looking that short-term solutions oftentimes can complicate things, and that the longer-term, mm-hmm. Unchaining those longer-term issues, like the issues that you put up in your post around these huge impediments to liberation that really are the real root of why people are in the situation that they're in now, because they didn't have that liberation or aspects of liberation in other in their everyday, outside of the hurricane or outside of the earthquake. Right?
Mm-hmm. And we have to fight, you know, because like we've been talking about DACA, and I think of all the youth and folks that are affected by that law being ended and the devastation that's happening in Mexico and how their economy can't probably take any more devastation. And, you know, it just kind of feels like they had rebuilt from the last horrible earthquake that they had had, and now they're in this situation. And then can you imagine deporting a ton of folks just back?
I think they're asking Mexico? The U.S. government to, or the Mexican government is asking for a halt in deportation.
Yeah,
please.
What?
Like,
what?
Come on now.
Come on. Like, that's
ridiculous.
Or any Caribbean country for that.
Yeah,
matter.
Any country right now. I think it was you, Maria, who was saying, like, you know, people want to hop on planes and go out there, but mm-hmm. they don't understand, like, maybe more bodies aren't what is needed out there right now. Yeah. You know? Because it's just more people to take care of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I just think about this, and I'm just saying to folks who listen, to spread the word and talk to folks mm-hmm. who at your workplace or in your neighborhood that may not really understand just the impact of these laws that you feel, well, I don't know anybody undocumented. My family's cool. We're cool. It's not about that. It's about building that unity mm-hmm. and thinking that we're all peoples of the sun. And at some point, we need that, in order to get liberated, we need to see that unification, that solidarity across all of these nationalistic ideals that we hold mm-hmm. from each of our places. And I know that's easy to say, but like little by little, just pass the word. Mm-hmm. Pasar la palabra, that's what we tell our families. Mm-hmm. What you talk about here, tell your neighbor. Mm-hmm. Tell the person at the corner store, at the tienda, at the laundromat. Just talk about this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just prepare yourselves because, you know, that could be us. Mm-hmm. That could be us in another 1989 earthquake, which I'm not ready for, so.
Yeah.
Starting my connections now.
I have PTSD for that.
Practicing your, like, response. Mm-hmm. You know, who are you going to call? What's your emergency plan? Like, what's your, like, even in, like, I'm thinking about DACA students, and I was at a speaking engagement with the gubernatorial candidate, and one of the things I remember some of the people were talking about were around like resources for DACA and stuff, and like, yeah, but in the moment it's not just about waving that little tarjeta mm-hmm. and saying, you know, I have rights. It's about like fighting for those rights, standing up mm-hmm. for those rights, and like practicing mm-hmm. what happens if someone comes to my door and is knocking mm-hmm. and is trying to get my cousin because he has DACA, you know, mm-hmm. or whatever.
Or when just getting your cousin who doesn't have DACA.
Or doesn't have DACA, right? And so, thinking about how do we just educate, prepare ourselves, have those informal networks formalized, you know, like I'm going to say, hey, Cynthia, you know, if something happens to me, I don't have a lot of family here. Mm-hmm. Can you get a hold of my sister?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Things like that.
It's important. So,
Gomez, who is the governor? I saw a picture on Facebook,
yeah.
I think.
Villaraigosa
was. Villaraigosa, yeah, yeah. Yes. Yeah. And for many years, he was very much in support in Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
For the Immigrant Rights Lobby
yeah.
Day.
Yeah.
He was one of the most outspoken supporters of
yeah.
that day. And what's he looking like right now? Is he like, is he...
Well, it's him or Gavin Newsom.
Wait. The guy that everyone thinks looks like a model.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yes.
Gavin Newsom.
So, yeah. So
all the white liberals in San Francisco are like...
Oh, the future Kennedy. You know, they call him the future Kennedy.
The future Kennedy. Give me
oh,
it. Well, you know, Kennedy... Okay. Let me not even get started. When people talk about corruption rising to the top. Come on now.
Oh, my God. He's the epitome.
Yeah. Yeah. The epitome.
Gross.
The epitome.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
From
he's a businessman.
From gangster to president.
Right. Well, America
no,
is the biggest gangster.
Well,
yeah, it
yeah,
is.
Villaraigosa does have an organizing background. He was a labor organizer, and he organized in the walkouts in L.A. and also with the UFW.
Okay.
So,
good to
that
hear.
Doesn't mean, you know, my thing is what are you doing right now?
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
What's
right
your
now
right now
is what matters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, but it's good that he was having discourse. He created a dialogue
he
with
folks.
He made
it. I mean, he there was like less than 30 people in the room, and he came all the way from Fresno to talk to folks.
As
queer,
he should.
Queer, trans
mm-hmm.
folks of color, for the most part, that were there.
Hey.
Okay. Impressive. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay. Keep it up.
Keep it up, Villaraigosa. You listen to our podcast.
I know, right?
That would be some outreach.
I know, right?
But like, I'm serious. As a state's majority Democrat, as a state's majority of color, like, how do we show that power?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not, because
mm-hmm.
we're still subjugated. We're still losing people. Like, homeless rates doubled in San Francisco, and a lot of those people displaced are Latinos.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Are black folk.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Housing. My organization, a housing organization, I mean, a housing crisis here in Oakland.
For youth.
For
youth. Foster
youth. Yeah, yeah.
Who need homes.
Who apparently the government's supposed to be taking care of. So, yeah, it's a lot.
So solidarity looks a lot different ways and a lot of different circumstances, but in essence, it's important. And
mm-hmm.
It's not just a word that you kind of like pop up on a sign and
mm-hmm.
only show up certain times a year.
Yeah.
It's a living thing every
exactly.
day. Exactly. Yeah.
It's making me think about when I arrived here to the U.S. for school, we got this exercise, an assignment for one of my courses where we needed to read an article, and then I was, okay, this is a lot more information to provide.
Yeah.
I was in a somatic psychology program because I was a body worker back in the day, and I wanted to bring together the body and psychology. And so we had to read this article, and then we had to come up with a body-oriented
mm-hmm.
Exercise. And the name of the article, the title of the article was Standing in Solidarity with Survivors of Sexual Violence.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a story about someone, a person that had gone through that trauma. And from the whole article, what stood out to me was the word solidarity. And it was me and another person, we came up with an exercise of how do you know in your body, how do you experience solidarity? What does that look like? What does that feel like? What is the shape of that? And so we did this experiential exercise with people to really embody what does solidarity look like, not as an idea or like
in
a definition, but like actually in your body, like
mm-hmm.
when
yeah.
you like you know when you stand in solidarity, actually what does that look like?
Mm-hmm.
And like it was so powerful because you see, you know, like the kinds of shapes that people take in their bodies when
mm-hmm.
they we saw everything from people
mm-hmm.
actually not even knowing what the word meant,
mm-hmm.
From people making associations of it, like communist, like, you know,
mm-hmm.
feel for it, but
mm-hmm.
also like bodies, you know,
mm-hmm.
like what, you know, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think it's different for everyone, but definitely you see a lot of activation in the body. Really, it's not much of a word, you know, it is an action.
Yes.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's that praxis. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like solidarity to me is like the ultimate showing of how you love someone.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the person that, I don't know, for me, I think about like recently, you know, coming out as trans, and I think about folks that just get it and how I just feel held
mm-hmm.
and loved by them, you know, it's an unconditional thing. So,
mm-hmm.
And it's an undefined thing. Like, you know, you shouldn't have to define solidarity. You should just know, like, it shouldn't be defined by just helping Americans. It's about much more than that.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've talked about a lot today.
Yes.
Yeah. We want to continue to hear from you all. I know that somebody on iTunes, and I don't remember the name of the person, shouted out Dismantled as one of two of their favorite podcasts. So, that's really cool to find that people are, you know, listening to us and you know, really sort of, we're becoming a favorite of some folks out there. That always warms our hearts, because we do this out of love for solidarity and organizing and action, and because we really do dream of liberated moments. And
Stephanie at Maestra Flaquita.
Oh. Stephanie at Maestra Flaquita, mm-hmm. That thank you so much.
Oh yeah, Flaca, we hear you.
Yeah, we hear you. Yeah, yeah, we hear you. It's like, my viejo say, aquí estoy, no me voy. So, you know, please continue to reach out to us on our Facebook page, Dismantled Diaspora. On IG, on Instagram.
Dismantled Crew on Twitter.
Dismantled Crew on Twitter. And Dismantled Page on Facebook. And just send us, even if it's just like a what's up, we really appreciate it. Or, you know, a DM or something.
Ideas, too.
Ideas, too. Mm-hmm. We want to hear what you all want to hear about. Questions. Mm-hmm. And with that, we're going to close out today with one of our four words, our tenets, our frameworks. So I can go first with love.
Discourse.
Solidarity.
And liberation.
Woo, woo.
Love, love, love.
Bye.
Bye.